Rutgers University in Camden supports WHYY and is hosting an open house for graduate programs from 5 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, October 21st. Rutgers Camden offers 28 graduate programs, including MBA, law, nursing, public affairs, computational biology, creative writing, criminal justice, and more. Details about the Rutgers Camden Graduate Open House on Wednesday, October 21st, online at camden.rutgers.edu/grad open house or 856-225-6104.
With Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey moving on from Philadelphia at the end of the year, many are wondering about his legacy that he'll leave. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. He's been one of the city's most praised public officials, both for his ability to bring coalitions together as well as to push for change. Though, as WHYY's Bobby Allen reports, Ramsey's skeptics view his 8 years as Philadelphia's top cop a little differently.
With a new mayor on the way, it's not completely shocking that Ramsey would see now as a natural point to leave.
And it's just time. I mean, I've been at this a long time.
He served in Chicago and Washington, D.C. before Philly, and his police career spans nearly 50 years.
I'm not tired. I'm not burnt out. In fact, I'm actually in my prime.
Many expect him to take a national job. With his experience of co-chairing President Obama's Federal Task Force on Police Reform, in Philly, he increased community policing, including more foot and bike patrols, and gave police captains more power.
More than half the people who are shot in Philadelphia are shot within 2 blocks of their home address.
Temple University criminologist Jerry Ratcliffe says Ramsey's policies did make communities feel safer.
So what foot patrols are doing is they are allowing the officers to spend time on foot and get to know the good people in the neighborhood and really get to know the bad people in the neighborhood. And you can't do that when you're driving down the street at 40 miles an hour.
Yet others, like Drexel political science professor George Chukwuelamar, question whether community relations are really less fractured since Ramsey.
Charles Ramsey's tenure has always been much more about rhetoric and image than it has about substance.
He says on the ground, not much has changed in 8 years.
With regard to the fact that police in Philadelphia continue to shoot and kill suspects at a much higher rate than many other cities.
Kelvin Anderson with the Police Advisory Commission says Ramsey has gone out of his way to make the department more open. His push to publicly name officers who fire their weapons is just one example, he says. Still, Ramsey's successor has a lot of work to do.
I think we still have some significant issues on the table with respect to stop and frisk. The ACLU reports on that topic over the years have shown disappointingly slow progress.
But even Ramsey himself says there's only so much one guy can accomplish.
We haven't done enough in some neighborhoods. There are still some neighborhoods that are far too unsafe. There are too many people being shot on the streets of our city, too many murders, too many robberies. We have to keep working to find a solution.
Part of that solution, Ramsey says, will be carrying out most of the 91 recommendations on new police training from the U.S. Department of Justice that he's leaving to his successor. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
Philadelphia made national headlines this week for high levels of lead exposure in children who live near a former factory site on the border of Kensington and Port Richmond. WHYY's Carolyn Beeler reports that a story in USA Today highlights a problem that's actually the norm in Philadelphia.
Lead smelting and paint production facilities straddled Aramingo Avenue north of York Street for almost 150 years, up until the mid-90s. And a recent federal study found that more than 1 in 10 kids tested in surrounding neighborhoods have elevated lead levels in their blood. The national average is 1 in 40.
I would love to say that I'm shocked, but obviously we're not.
That's Sandy Saltzman, head of the New Kensington Community Development Corporation.
We were expecting them to be high. I don't think we thought they were going to be as high as they were or as many houses were going to be involved.
126 kids in Northern Liberties, Port Richmond, and Kensington were tested last summer. So were soil samples. About three-quarters of those had elevated lead levels as well. Joanne Hand lives across the street from the site.
Nobody ever told us how bad it was, how high the levels were. I mean, we played in the lot when we were younger. We used to have a baseball team coming out of there.
Federal officials say it's unclear if the lead in the soil is left over from factory emissions or if it's from other sources, such as lead house paint or leaded gasoline. And as bad as the problem is around the old factory site, elevated blood lead levels there are about the same as city averages for kids. The NKCDC's Saltzman still wants the Environmental Protection Agency to step in and clean up her neighborhood.
Obviously, it needs to be fixed citywide, but I want to see my neighborhood fixed first. We've been fighting this fight for a very long time.
The EPA hopes to decide within the next few months on whether any soil cleanup will be done. I'm Carolyn Beeler, WHYY News.
New Jersey may be the most densely populated state in the nation, but some of South Jersey is so rural, you'd never know it. It's in these rural areas that residents have been complaining of chronic issues with their telephone and internet service. WHYY's Joe Hernandez talked to some South Jerseyans who say they're on the wrong side of the digital divide.
7 years ago, in the middle of the night, Jim DeJohn was awakened by the sound of two state troopers banging on his front door. They told him his son, Joe, had been in a car accident.
Turning the light on and seeing them standing at the door, you right away know there's something bad. But if they'd have called on the phone, it would have been a little different. We'd have been.
As DeJohn learned, they had tried calling for hours, and nobody answered the phone in the house because the phone never rang.
I think our lines was out for about 2 days. Before we even knew, when the accident happened, that's when we figured it out.
DeJohn says this happens often in Hopewell Township in Cumberland County. Their landline phone has had problems ever since they moved there. It would either fill up with static or go dead altogether, and it would happen if the weather was bad or the county workers mowed the lawn too close to the connection box or for no apparent reason at all.
You feel like you're disconnected from the rest of the world when you're out here, and if somebody was trying to get a hold of you and they can't get a hold of you, and you didn't even know. We didn't even know.
This is not an uncommon complaint in South Jersey, says Stephanie Brand. She runs the Division of Rate Council, the independent state agency that advocates on behalf of utility customers in New Jersey. She says it happens to customers relying on old copper lines that phone companies have let deteriorate.
We've been hearing a lot of reports from people that their landline service doesn't work, their copper wire service, their traditional telephone, that whenever it rains, it goes out, they have a lot of static on the line. There are a lot of problems down in South Jersey.
Brand and others say Verizon, the required phone service provider for most of the state, is responsible for these issues.
It's the same as with your water or your electricity or your gas that, you know, it's something you need. It's not a luxury.
There's a lot of anecdotes out there from customers who are having service issues, but the overall data shows that service quality in southern New Jersey is solid.
Verizon spokesman Lee Gerzinski says stories from dissatisfied customers don't paint the full picture.
In fact, Verizon's trouble report rate in the area is 1.8 troubles per 100 access lines, and that is well below the Board of Public Utilities standard of 2.3 troubles per access lines.
Gerzinski insists the company is continuing to invest in its copper wire infrastructure. Verizon is also on the hook to provide broadband internet service throughout the state under a law passed in the early 90s called Opportunity New Jersey. But a recent ruling from the Board of Public Utilities has let the company fulfill that obligation with the older DSL service or 4G wireless internet. That's affecting residents like Tim Van Meter, who lives on a farm in Hopewell Township with his fiance and young daughter. He can't get DSL over his phone line, and Verizon's faster fiber optic service, Fios, stops 6 utility poles away from his house. That leaves him with wireless internet through his cell phone, which he says is both inconvenient and expensive.
For a plan that's going to fit my needs, probably 300, 400 gigabytes a month, you know, doing that over the air is going to cost me $700. Nobody's going to have to pay that much money for the internet. So, I don't know, it's just a tough spot to be in.
Like DeJohn, who has a landline phone, Van Meter can get wireless internet from Verizon, but he says it shouldn't be this difficult.
It's 2015 in America, in New Jersey, the most densely populated state in the country, and I can't get internet. So it's amazing to me.
Verizon offers a program for people who don't have broadband coverage in New Jersey, but it can be difficult to qualify. You have to be without access to wired or wireless internet from any company, and you need 35 people living in the same census tract who don't have internet access either. Critics say the State Board of Public Utilities has been too easy on Verizon. The BPU recently decided to deregulate Verizon's landline phone obligations, and it also said the company could fulfill its Opportunity New Jersey requirement with older, slower broadband standards. The BPU declined to comment for the story, saying both matters are under appeal. Van Meter says people aren't looking for a handout in rural South Jersey, and in fact, they would be happy to pay for quality service or any broadband service at all, as long as they could get it.
Everybody seems to be on board, at least in our little nook of Hopewell here, so they'd definitely take the service if Verizon ran into our houses, so it's in their hands now, I guess.
From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
Taking a look at this evening's headlines, tomorrow's the deadline for homeowners seeking to challenge their Superstorm Sandy flood damage claims. More than 144,000 homeowners participating in the National Flood Insurance Program suffered a loss in the October 2012 storm. After many complained about low payouts, the Federal Emergency Management Agency allowed them to request a review. As of last week, more than 16,000 policyholders had asked for such a review of their claim. The Third U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Philadelphia voted today to reconsider an earlier ruling that banned New Jersey's attempt to offer sports betting at casinos and racetracks. In 2012, the state was sued by the four major sports leagues and the NCAA after it passed a law to allow sports betting. 63 degrees, mostly clear skies at 6:15. You're listening to NewsWorks Tonight on WHYY. Clear skies overnight, falling back to 48 degrees. Sunny tomorrow, Thursday's high in the mid-60s. Friday, a mix of sun and clouds, high again around 65 degrees. Sunny Saturday, high near 60. Still ahead.
I know danger when I see it, generally. And I just didn't see it.
We'll learn how one dad's attempt to provide a fun ride home for his daughters ended up with a call to local police when NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Abington Friends School, an independent Quaker school for students preschool through grade 12, supports WHYY. This spring, the student-led Abington Friends School robotics team qualified to compete at the Robotics World Championships. Abington Friends School is committed to preparing students for real-world success by feeding creativity and encouraging innovative, out-of-the-box thinking. Learn more about Abington Friends School at an open house on Saturday, October 17th at 1 p.m. Details at abingtonfriends.net.
Tyler Park Center for the Arts supports WHYY, presenting Crafts in the Meadow Fall Invitational Juried Craft Show, October 17th and 18th at Tyler State Park, Bucks County. Featuring works from more than 120 fine artists and craftsmen representing a variety of artistic and functional mediums. Highlights include demonstrations, hands-on art experiences for all ages, and music from John Beecher, J.B. Klein, Kelly Stratton Band, and more. For details and a list of artists and musicians, tylerparkarts.org.
Frederick Living supports WHYY. Frederick Living, a continuing care retirement community nestled in the beautiful countryside of Montgomery County, is proud to announce the expansion of their campus. The meadows at Frederick Living will consist of 55 cottages clustered in an innovative design based on the pocket neighborhood concept. Frederick Living is now taking reservations. Visits can be scheduled by calling 610-754-7878. That's 610-754-7878. Frederick Living. Live well.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. When Montgomery County dad Christopher Malloy wanted to give his three young daughters a memorable experience last week, he hitched a couple of wagons to his riding mower and puttered two blocks to the girls' school for pickup. Malloy says he rode on the sidewalk at an average speed of, around 4 miles an hour. With his delighted daughters in tow, Chris started to pull away, and that's where we pick up the story. He joins me now on NewsWorks Tonight, and Chris, take it from there.
I'm just about ready to drive off when a woman, I'm not sure if she was staff or a parent, but she was very upset, and she kind of gives a dismissive wave towards the whole contraption and says, "This is dangerous." And I disagreed, and I'm sure my face showed it. But she wandered off. She couldn't even handle my reply. She was very upset. So I really don't think anything of it. I hop on the tractor, fire it up, and again about 4 or 5 miles an hour, put her all the way back home. We crossed with the crossing guard. I got smiles and waves from the people picking up their kids and the kids who were walking with us. At one point, my daughter got bored. We were going so slow, and she actually got out and ran ahead.
And again, to be clear, this entire commute was not on the road, but on the sidewalk.
It was actually on the sidewalk, yeah. The next day was a Tuesday. I was at work until 5, and my wife got an email from the principal saying that, you know, she had gotten complaints and calls and even a video, and for traffic and safety reasons, I shouldn't do it again.
Did the principal more specifically explain the nature of the complaints?
No, she was very vague. And the more I thought about it, you know, there was no concern. I've got an engineering degree. I've got a master's in anesthesia. I know healthcare. I know mechanics. I know danger when I see it, generally. And I just didn't see it. And so I checked with some close friends and to see if maybe I was missing something, because that can happen. And no, we all sort of agreed that this was a fun thing that someone was trying to squash. So I replied back. I asked for specifics that I could do differently. And the email I got back was, you know, it was harsh. She had gotten in touch with the police department and said that the police would be coming to me to talk about the safety concerns regarding the hayride I had taken my children on.
Did you hear back from the department?
Yeah. Officer Schifertelli of the Upper Dublin Police Department reached out to me via email, and he stopped by my house. Unfortunately, I was at work. And basically had said that the school district had asked him to talk to me about the safety concerns. I really don't think, I mean, I've looked at the DMV, and the, in an article they had mentioned that there really is no crime. It's really just a, you know, the school district doesn't want me to do it, as far as I can tell, and nobody has any real reason why not.
So in the absence of learning that there were DMV rules that were being broken, it is, I guess, just a matter of safety concerns. But putting that in context, I'm pretty sure it would be legal in Pennsylvania for you to pick up either Ella or Anna or Lydia on a motorcycle and put a helmet on them and zoom back home.
Yeah, I'm unfamiliar with the DMV rules. That's one of the things I hope to clarify with Officer Schifertelli this evening. I know that there's an orange triangle I need on the back of my tractor, and I actually bought one off of Amazon. I still have to mount it. Because, yeah, obviously I don't want to be unsafe. They're my children, and I love them, and my goal is to give them a positive experience and to teach them the way the world is and to give them confidence to stand up. So I'm standing up for them now because they're 8, 5, and 4. But really just to enjoy being kids for now and to not necessarily let somebody put a damper on things.
Who knew that an innocently intended hayride would turn into a civics lesson for 3 young girls as well?
Yeah, this is the whole experience has really just been overwhelming, and I got to be honest with you, fairly enjoyable. I guess it's enjoyable primarily because of the vindication and the positive responses I'm getting from, you know, nearly everyone. Obviously, safety is a concern with children and just in general in life. But nothing is risk-free, and this didn't seem to increase risk in any measurable or significant way, and yet increased the enjoyable aspects of it in a huge way.
Chris, thanks for sharing your story with us.
Oh, thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Montgomery County dad and hayride enthusiast Christopher Malloy. Fort Washington Elementary School Principal Stephanie Holquist got back to us and indicated, quote, all decision-making during this situation was done so that the safety of all students was foremost in mind. Kinky Friedman, singer-songwriter, satirist, author, journalist, Texas politician, is now touring the East Coast in support of his new album entitled The Loneliest Man I Ever Met. Kinky Friedman, thanks so much for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
Dave, a pleasure to be here.
In our time together, let's make sure we touch on the music first. This is your first studio album in several decades. What led you to scratch that itch?
Life does get in the way, politics, writing books. The main reason I did this record was because I was badgered and hectored by a man named Brian Molnar, and I met him about 10 years ago at a show in New Jersey. And he's persistent in doing a record like this and doing it at the ranch, which means not a real recording studio. And he brought down Mickey Rayfield, Willie Nelson's harmonica player, who is just the greatest. And really, that's what you're hearing mostly on The Loneliest Man I Ever Met. On this record, you're hearing 2 instruments, and it is stripped down to the soul, but I think that kind of gives you room to, you know, bring your own imagination to the party.
You thank in part George Frain, Commander Cody, for helping you get your first record contract.
And he also got it on the label that passed on Bob Dylan, Vanguard Records.
You toured with Bob Dylan during his Rolling Thunder review in 76, I believe.
That was an amazing experience in a lot of ways. And I found that if you're playing for 50,000 people, that's easier to do than playing for a couple hundred in a club.
How so?
Well, you're like a star when you get up there on stage. You're not really. It's a whole different art. And the other one is like cabaret. It's like the people are kind of organic. I mean, and the way we're doing this, the Willie Nelson method, never taking a day off for 35 shows, you will be running on pure adrenaline after a while, and I'm almost there right now. You know, you start hearing Hank Williams and Jesus Christ and Johnny Appleseed and Lenny Bruce all speaking to you. So it's kind of a spiritual endurance thing. So far, it's not only been a financial pleasure, but it's been a spiritual one as well.
Now, Kinky, I take it you don't embarrass easily, but explain how you passed on the opportunity to write and or record with both Bob Dylan and Shel Silverstein.
I don't know. I read in Woody Guthrie's biography that Woody did pretty much the same thing. Every great opportunity he had in life, he just threw it away almost deliberately. The thing with Bob was just Bob wanted to write a record. He wanted to write an album. You know, let's do it. And we were on the island of Yalapa right after the Rolling Thunder review. And I just didn't feel like it. I thought we ought to rest up, you know. I mean, where everybody was tired. Looking back on it, I mean, anybody would go ahead and write the record with Bob, but that would be a practical, rational move. And I think it's probably the reason Bob and I are still in touch today and our linkage is still strong. And that's why the song, Girl from the North Country, is not so much a cover. But in this case, it's kind of halfway between Bob and me. And I asked Mickey Rayfield, I said, give us early, skinny, Jewish, palpably Bob Dylan harmonica. And Mickey explained to me, he said, Kinky, this is not karaoke. I've got to interpret this song the way I feel. Country fair, where the winds hit heavy on the borderline. Remember me. And so, to me, the record has really become kind of not so much a record as a mirror.
We are post the heyday of karaoke, hopefully for many, but describe the music scene in 2015, and could a Willie Nelson or Bob Dylan or even Kinky Friedman emerge in this climate?
No, absolutely not. Everything has changed. I don't know the answer for why great songs are not being written today. I think Willie and Bob and Merle and Billy Joe Shaver and Christofferson, if they wrote a great song today, would we even know it? I'm not sure that the culture would accept it. I think, Dave, you know this story of Nelson Mandela. It's more than a story. When I was in South Africa in 96 with his right-hand man who was in the prison cell next to Mandela on Robben Island. This guy's name was Tokyo Seshwale. He's the one who told me that they used to try to smuggle in tape cassettes as best they could, and they somehow got a hold of Sold America, my first record. And Mandela started playing Ride 'em Jew Boy. It would be the last song he would play every night. And, when we recorded that record, Sold American, in 1973 in Nashville, people told us, you know, you never know who's going to hear a record like this. We were just wondering, will the disc jockeys understand it? Will they play it? The last thing in my mind was that Nelson Mandela will be listening to this in his prison cell on Robben Island.
I've heard you say that your best song is your next song, but in that context, would you say that Ride 'em Jew Boy is among the songs of which you're most proud?
Ride 'em Jew Boy, Wild Man from Borneo. I think the loneliest man I ever met is connecting with a lot of people. The album is romantic. Some say melancholy, but I think it's romantic, and I think true romance is always tragic. True love usually winds up in a hostage situation. You know, if Romeo and Juliet had lived happily ever after, we wouldn't even know their names.
Kinky Friedman, good luck on the balance of this extensive tour. Good luck with The Loneliest Man I Ever Met. Thanks for spending time with us on Newsworks tonight.
Thank you, Dave. We appreciate it. Last night he had them in his hands
and kept them laughing till... There's much more from Kinky up close and personal on Newsworks.org, holding forth on his runs for office, the presidential political landscape, even Barry Manilow. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov and Kimberly Haas, with key help today from Adam Stanishevsky. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.
Virtua proudly supports WHYY. This is the time of year to sign up for health insurance. When choosing a health insurance plan, it's important to know whether your doctor or hospital is included. If you want to use a virtual physician, hospital, or outpatient service, you can find out if virtual is in the plan you're considering by calling 888-VIRTUA-3. That's 888-VIRTUA-3. Virtua proudly supports WHYY.
Karen Treatment Center supports WHYY. Is someone you care about struggling, losing interest in activities they loved? Changes like these can be a sign of drug and alcohol abuse. As a behavioral health care and addiction treatment center, Karen helps families understand when professional help is warranted, offering therapies that restore wellness in body, mind, and spirit. A confidential assessment is available at 855-894-4325 or at karen.org. That's C-A-R-O-N.org.